Hello, this is Mihai Roșoncicovaci on the Folk Talk series of iDance Hungary platform, the program dedicated to the non-Hungarian speakers of the dance house movement. And I have the honor to have a guest with me today, Judy Krapf from New York. Hello, Judy.
Hey, Mishi.
Thank you very much for your time. You were a person that Julie Johnson, my very close colleague, suggested to someone who we should definitely involve and definitely talk to. You said that I'm neither a dancer nor a singer, but I like Hungarian dances. And actually, you are the type of person we would like to provide this program with. So I think it will be very beneficial for us to get to know you, get to know your experience with the Hungarian dances, how you met our culture and what it means to you.
Great. That's awesome. By the way, do you mind if I correct you for a second? I am a dancer, but just not a musician.
Yes. Yes.
Just wanted to set the record clear. Yeah. I play a little Utugardon, but I don't know if that counts.
Of course, everything counts. So please give a little introduction about yourself. What do you do? And how you met Hungarian dances?
Well, what I do right now, I teach Judaica and Hebrew in a synagogue. And so what I do during the day has nothing to do at all with my love for folklore or Hungarian folk dancing. I actually got into Hungarian folk dancing, and it was a long journey. I started as a child doing Israeli folk dancing at my synagogue and at camps, at Jewish camps. And then much later, I got into Balkan music and folk dancing, more international, not just Israeli dancing. And through that, I happened to be in Israel. I was living in Israel at the time. This was after high school. I went to university in Jerusalem. And then I was folk dancing every week. I got into international folk dancing. And then one day to my international folk dance group in Jerusalem, three Hungarians showed up, and their names, I don't know, you may know them. One is Shalai Sándor. You may know him. He was in Daily Bob, and he's very well known in the music community. Yeah. And he came with Kis Ferenc from Debrecen. I know there's more than one Kis Ferenc, but this one was a dancer, not a musician. And a woman named Ildiko, whose last name I do not remember, but she's blonde, and she was also from Debrecen. They were all from Debrecen at that point. And they came to sort of demonstrate Hungarian dancing, Hungarian music to people in Israel. And if you want to hear a little bit more of an eerie sort of, the way it turned out, I can't even think of a word, serendipitous. I can't think of the word in English or in Hungarian or in any language, but they happened to be at one of Modder Kalman's symposia. It was in Connecticut or something. And they met who would later be my future husband, who is my husband now. They met my husband, Noel. And they said, Noel, you're Jewish. We want to go to Israel. Can you think of who to connect me with so I can go to Israel and teach Hungarian dancing or teach show Hungarian music? And he said, sure, you should get in touch with this woman, Sorel, who lived in Jerusalem, who was the director of my dance group there. So this is just to show you how all the little circles come together. So then these people showed up. Of course, I didn't know Noel at this point, my husband. So anyway, my friend Yael and I sort of adopted Shani and Ferry and Ildiko. We sort of adopted them. We just really were all like kindred spirits. And we took them all over Israel, and they performed at this kibbutz and at that moshav and at all these different places. And we got to be really good friends with them. And we sort of fell in love with each other. It was like a love fest. It was really, really lovely. And then when we parted, we said, oh, let's stay in touch. But remember, this is very many years ago. This is, I don't know, I want to say, no, it couldn't be the 70s, the 80s. It was before email, really. It was before all that stuff. Anyway, so moving on, I lived in Israel for a few more years, kept trying to do Hungarian dancing, but hadn't really learned. It was just a quick visit for them. Then moved back to the States. And I got involved with folk dancing, different kinds of folk dancing, and, you know, joined a Polish group or whatever. And then I saw a Hungarian folk dance group perform. Oh, I'm sorry. And this is in the Washington, D.C. area. And so this group named Tisza Ensemble, Tisza Edutesh, you know, lovely, lovely people. But I asked them, can I please join? I would really like to learn Hungarian dancing. And they said, no, we have too many women. We can't use you yet. Oh. And I said, okay. So I kept dancing in my Polish folk dance group. And then one time the directors of Tisza came to a festival where I was performing, and I soloed singing and dancing with this Polish guy, Waldek, and it was awesome. And they came up and they were like, okay, we want you to come and be in our group. And I said, okay. And then soon after that, I think Puder, Nod Zoltan, may he rest in peace.
Yes.
Came with Kati, I don't remember, Juhas Kati, and we're teaching dance workshops. And so I participated in one of those. Kotanski also were teaching Bonsidai, you know, and just I started participating in different workshops, and I started dancing with Tisza, and it was amazing. And I'm sorry, I don't want to get long and boring.
Sorry,
I started. Yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but just for those listeners who are not familiar with international folk dancing from the States, can you tell us a couple of words? So you said that you were involved in other dances. I hear that this was a movement started in the 30s, 40s, and you basically could learn not very deeply, but many kinds of dances of different ethnicities at the same event. So how were these events, or how we should imagine this international folk dance movement that you mentioned, that you started with?
Okay, let me think about how to phrase this. When I first saw international dancing, I didn't find it very interesting. I was actually at an Israeli folk dance camp in North Carolina at Camp Blue Star. And I saw all these American people in between doing Israeli dances. They would do these very repetitive, you know, and I didn't know if it was Bulgarian, former Yugoslavia, whatever. They were just dancing these dances in circles. And compared to Israeli dances, which are very choreographed, these were like one step over and over and over and over again. So I just thought, no, that's not for me. But then when I got better introduced to international dancing in Jerusalem, I thought it was amazing because, yes, in the same tantas or in the same, you know, gathering where people would meet to dance, you could say, oh, we're going to do an old English, you know, form dance, like with partners and stuff, or we're all going to get in a line. We all must wear belts and hold each other's belts and be in this very powerful Bulgarian dance. And this here is a men's dance from, I don't know, Turkey. And this here is a Serbian dance that everybody does holding each other's elbows. And Sorel Foreman, who was the woman who was leading Jerusalem folk dancing, international folk dancing in Jerusalem at that point, was very particular. Oh, it's a belt dance. So if you didn't bring your own belt, she would have a whole pile of belts there that you could come and retrieve. And everybody had to hold belts. And the women all wore skirts because that was the way, you know, it just was very structured and very nice, but it was very varied, you know.
So it was already challenging for you to as a better dancer.
Wait, you're asking, was it challenging?
The dance part is, or better that, but because you said that earlier, it was, it didn't captivate.
It didn't captivate me. Okay, so thank you for reminding me, because I'd forgotten this story at all. So I was doing Israeli dancing like three or four times a week at the university. I was in university at this point. And at some point, I was doing a very athletic couples dance and broke my foot. I landed on it weird and I broke my foot in two places. So meanwhile, I was in a cast for a long time, and it was too depressing to go back to Israeli dancing and just sit there sadly with my foot in a cast and watch all my friends dance. So I went, people had been telling me, come to international folk dancing. So I went to international folk dancing and sat and watched and saw things in, you know, some 7/8, 9/8, 9/16, 12. all these different rhythms that Israeli dancing is a lot of 4/4. There are some waltzes, you know, 3/4. There are some, obviously, 2/4. But very simple things. We had a few Israeli dances that were 7/8. That's probably as complicated as it got. And all of a sudden, I fell in love with 9/8. I fell in love with odd rhythms. And, you know, I was just captivated by this. So I just watched and watched and watched. I kept coming back every week to watch while my foot was still in the cast. And then as I was healing and I got out of the cast, I started like getting immersed and sort of drinking the Kool-Aid, as we say in English, like getting like, oh, I see the attraction. I see why people are into this now. And also, Sorelle kept it very pure. You know, she was very into, all right, this is the style of this dance, and this is the style of this dance. So you didn't just like have a mishmash of making jam out of all the different styles. You had a clear Bulgarian style and a clear Serbian style and a clear, you know, Croatian or whatever. So it was very, very interesting to learn like that. And I still like it, like if I'm taking a singing class or whatever, and somebody's telling me from this tradition, you know, they bring the vowels forward or they, you know, bring the vowels back or whatever. It's very, very nice to feel the differences between all the different, nations, all the different peoples.
You said already a couple of Hungarian words and your accent is brilliant.
Thanks. Thanks. I've been doing Duolingo since COVID, but I'm stuck in a very difficult grammatical section of Hungarian now. I could really use your help.
Maybe after the discussion.
Maybe after. Yeah, I won't go into it now. It'd be too boring.
So basically, you had a big focus on different dances of the world, or you were already involved in a Polish group. So how do we arrive to this phase of when Hungarian dances, emerge from this vast variety of different cultures?
Right. So remember, I was dancing in the Polish group, and I'd been dancing in it for about 4 years. And then Tisza had room for me, and I really didn't have room in my schedule to be in two groups. So I quit the Polish and went for the Hungarian. And the Hungarian group, the people were very, very into the language and the culture, into learning the songs properly. It was just very, very special and more intense. Like people were really like living it. It was the Polish group, people would come, and there were some Polish people in the group, but it wasn't like 24/7 they were thinking about Poland or Polish dances or anything like that. And I loved it. I loved it. Don't get me wrong. I thought it was a great, great group. But the Hungarian, they just really seemed a little bit like addicted to it. And they had all been to Hungary and they all spoke a little Hungarian and they were really into it. And so, you know, and as I got to learn the dances, I sort of was drinking the Kool-Aid, as it were, the new Kool-Aid, the palinka or whatever, because I don't know, something about these dances really spoke to my soul. And it wasn't that the Polish and the other, the Yugo dances weren't speaking to my soul, but this was like deep. And I was like, was I Hungarian in a previous life or something? Something weird. So then I started.
Can you try to explain what were the characteristics of the dances, or it's just hard. It's impossible to put in word.
Something about the music, they start playing and it's like my blood is singing. How do I put this? It's not even like, because even now the language is like, sometimes I'll put on a song and I'll understand the words, and sometimes I'll put on a song and I won't understand the words at all. Same as I don't really understand a lot of Bulgarian either, even though I've also learned a lot of Bulgarian songs. But something about the Hungarian, it just touches my heart. It just is connected to my heart. I wish I could explain it more eloquently, no, but I can't.
It's enough, yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. Anyway, so started learning the songs, started learning the dances, started learning about the costumes, about the culture, started learning, dabbling a little bit in Hungarian language. Back then it wasn't even CDs in your car. It was cassettes in your car. So I bought a little like language, you know, Kirem miget solvita, you know, blah, 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 in my car and like talking and driving in my car while I was trying to learn song words in my car, that sort of thing. And then I had been going to Hungarian to symposium. Did you know about symposium by the Magyar family?
Magyar Kamen founded the camp.
The camp, which was an amazing camp. And I attended it for quite a few years. So I met a very special woman at these camps. She was a lot younger than me, but somehow we connected. We were like sisters from another mister, you know. And her name was Trixie Nod, and now she's married to Uchi, to Kalman Magyar Jr. She's married to him. And but anyway, she and I got to be really good friends. And she said, do you want to come to Hungary with me? And this was one summer after camp, or I had gone to camp and she hadn't, because she had been in Hungary with her relatives. So I came to visit her and I was immediately able to, you know, Pinc Bavaltoni and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was like amazing. I was practicing my words from the car and boom, I could actually change money and do all sorts of things in Hungary, in Hungarian. It was like magic. And I don't know. And I traveled around with Trixie and, you know, just had a great time in Hungary. And I have lots of funny stories from then. I don't know if whatever Trixie and I, 20, 30 years later, we still laugh about all these things. What else? You know, oh, gosh. It also, just not to backtrack and not to get off of the going to Hungary and how special that was, but going to symposium and later to Csipke Tábor, you know, this is many years later, it provides for Americans and for people who don't get to Hungary all the time, an amazing opportunity to meet people who are super, like, amazing folk dance teachers, amazing musicians, amazing singers. And they're like national treasures in Hungary. Like, these are like super, like, special people. And here they come meet and play and teach singing to these little Americans who might be doing Bulgarian dancing or Polish dancing or whatever. And, oh, let's go to a Hungarian workshop. And you're meeting, like, literally a treasure of Hungarian folklore, like Halmos Béla, like Zoltán Zsuravsky and his wife, Vince Zsuzsa, like Puder, like, who I mentioned before, like, just all these wonderful, wonderful treasures. So I just want to say to people, if you ever were curious about this dancing and wanted to learn to think, you know, Hungarian camps in the United States have been amazing, at least for me personally. Halmos Béla, and I don't know if you knew him, but he was an amazing, amazing violinist and a really important researcher in the Táncház movement. It, you know, he was one of the ones who went to Transylvania and got the music and, you know, spoke with the people. And anyway, having him at camp was just amazing. And I sort of fell in love with him. I mean, anybody could fall in love with him. He was just one of these charming, charming people. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. How was he? Can you tell a couple of words about him? Because it's so nice to recall the memories about
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he passed away a few years ago. And I was so upset because I almost felt like he's like an uncle of mine. You know, he was just yummy, just like a big bear that you just want to take in your arms and hug. And very, very funny, very sarcastic, but funny. Like, for example, once he was teaching, like a song from his Mezőség music album. And he was like, Judy, you sing us a line. And you know what? There were all these Hungarians in the room and he's picking on me. So I was like, no. And he's like, chicken, you know, you're scared of this or whatever. And I remember him teasing me like that. But then what was funny, fast forward many years later in like 96 or 97, I can't remember which year it was, but I was in Hungary that summer. And where Trixie and I were staying at the home of one of the Alami dancers. And Halmos Béla, unbeknownst to me, was like I think at that point he was the musical director of one of the Alami, or he was involved there, right there in that area and in Budapest. And so I kept on bumping into him like 3 or 4 times we would be walking and I would see him. And he would be like, Judy, you must not keep following me because my wife will get worried, you know. So that's what I meant about him being sarcastic and funny and sort of flirty, but in a very safe way, not in a creepy, weird way or anything like that. He was just lovely and very funny, lovely, lovely person. And I also, Fodor Sandor was amazing musician. And I feel like I'm just like a little American, like, what do I know, you know? But I've got a picture of Neti Shonibachi on my wall, you know, like you walk into my house, I have photographs from Kasia Bela and from Steve Spinder. I don't know if you knew Steve Spinder either.
No.
He's American photographer from like Rochester. And he moved to Hungary for a few years to take pictures, but he was a member of Tisza Ensemble when I was. So, he's one of my favorite people to dance with even today. He has books and books of gorgeous, gorgeous Transylvanian portraits. So, you know, there's another connection. And anyway, he took the picture of Neti that's on my wall. What else? Oh, Ökrös Csabi. Did you ever know Csaba Ökrös?
Yes, I learned from him. I also played at the funeral of Halmos Béla, so it's so nice to hear these stories.
Right, I saw it on the internet. That's really nice that you played for him. Oh, wow.
And
Ökrös Csabi?
Yes. Actually, my father used to be a diplomat in Poland, and he organized many tours for the Ökrös Ensemble. I personally think that for my generation, there's two albums, the Bonsida Háromszor and the Kalotaszegi Mulató Énekek, edited by Kelemen László, was really a milestone. And
absolutely. I have all of those in my collection.
But coming back to the camps,
yes.
I talked to musicians, Hungarian musicians from Hungary who attended the camps, and I was curious how they were different from the camps in the Carpathian Basin, and they said that really the American people's openness was really something that they were very happy to experience. How do you feel about the particularities of the American Hungarian dance house movement? So to say, you attended Hungary many times. What do you think is your contribution to this movement? Obviously, it's easier from outside, but what are the special characteristics, if there are any, what you see, maybe differences from what you experienced in Hungary?
This is really, really good question. Okay, so let's see, what Hungarian camps I've been to in the States would have been, okay, so I went to many symposia, I don't remember how many, and I've been to many Csipke Tábor, and once I went to Barátság Tábor in the Bay Area, in Mendocino, actually, a long time ago. Loved all of those camps, had great experiences. And of course, what I liked a lot about the camps was that there was English translation for people, so to make it more accessible. And when I went to Teka Tábor, I went to a Jászberény camp. I have never been to a camp in Erde in Transylvania, but I would love to go. But obviously, I have to get my Hungarian much, much better because it's impossible to. I mean, the thing is, as a woman, when you just follow the man, it's not as difficult as for the men because. So if you didn't understand what the teacher said, big deal. You just follow your partner. And I'm a pretty good follower. You know, I've danced dances that I didn't know at all. And you just follow the guy. If he's a good leader, you can figure it out. And, you know, the music obviously helps, of course, a great deal. But you know, the conditions are actually a lot better at American camps. Maybe Americans are a little more spoiled than Hungarians. I don't know. We're used to being like, we like the soft life. We like, you know, toilets that flush and, you know, nice, clean situation. But, you know, I still love the Hungarian camps that we went to. We had a really good time. Trixie and I still laugh about Teka Tábor and how we were up all night, you know, dancing and singing and just, you know, ended up taking off our shoes and dancing barefoot in the sand. And it was just like amazing experience. So it's like, you know, camps everywhere. You're going to find what you like. And you might also see things, okay, well, I prefer the food here, or I prefer the unicum there, or whatever it is. But everybody, you know, you need to pick and choose where you're most comfortable and find out what serves you. But I've had a really good time at all the camps.
Sorry, I lost your visual. Maybe you switched off your camera.
Not at all. I can still see my camera's on.
Okay, maybe then it switched automatically to keep the quality of the sound.
Could be.
If I may ask, you mentioned that you work with Hebrew and Judaica during the day.
Yes.
So religion is important part of your life. Do you also have a special interest in Hungarian Jewish musical and dance tradition? Have you searched, for example, Muzsikás has an album with Jewish heritage?
Yeah, that's an interesting story too. So when I was still living in Washington, that's when the Moromorosh album came out, and Kati and Rudy, who were the directors of TISA at that point, Kathy Lamont and Rudy Petke. Rudy Petke passed away a few years ago, but Kathy is still the leader of that group, and she would be a wonderful person for you to interview. She arranged that we should get tickets to the Muzsikás concert. And I said, great, I'm way into Muzsikás. I love them. I love their music. I love their research and everything. So we went, and then afterwards, Sebastian Marta said, well, let's all go out to dinner together. And I said, okay. And I ended up, I don't know if you know the meaning of the word starstruck, but it's sort of like you meet this famous person whose work you've admired for so long, and you just can't say anything because your throat is like somewhere else. And so I was in between Sebastian Marta, whom I really admire, and Homar Daniel, whose sense of humor and musicality I also really admire. And I was in between these people. And I don't have a problem talking to famous people or anything, but I was like so nervous. And then Marty just turned to me and she was like, so what's this? You know, and she was asking me about chickpeas. And then we started talking about husbands and divorces, and we just started blah, 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 blah all night. And so the conversation turned to Jewish music because I told her I was Jewish, blah, blah, blah. And she said, yeah, you know, these researching was, you know, very interesting. And they were like, yes. Then there was this song and they were saying, you know, mommy, mommy. And they were like, and we figured it's sort of like mother, like Yiddish Onyam, like you know, in Hungarian music, there's lots of Yiddish Onyam and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it's from a Hebrew song called Anima Amin, Anima Amin, which means I believe, I believe. And it's like a, I don't know if it originated during the Holocaust time, but it comes from, so the story goes in Jewish folklore is that the Jews would sing it like on the way to the concentration camps, that I still believe in the coming of the Messiah. And though he may tarry, yet I still believe he will come. It's sort of like a song of, you know, believing that things will get better, sort of like us through coronavirus. We believe that one day things will turn to normal.
I just got goosebumps now listening to
exactly this. Exactly. And so but I was kind of surprised that Muzsikás didn't seem to understand that that's where the mommy mommy, that's what they heard. It was Anima Amin, Anima Amin. And they didn't get it directly from the Jews. They got it from the gypsies who had heard the Jews singing this. So it was sort of like this folklore sort of translated and then translated again. But, you know, ethnomusicology is such a, it depends on whom you ask and when and what opportunities you have to interview these people. So it could be that they couldn't find original sources for this material, but it's a gorgeous album. I love the album, but it just highlighted for me how difficult it is to do musical research and how hard it is to preserve these folklore traditions.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I could grab at this chance to talk to an expert, and it's so nice to see how joyful you are while speaking about dances and generally how you speak. And people, maybe not religious people, tend to sometimes to have a preconception that religion is per se something dark, when you have to deprive yourself of joy and happiness. So can I ask what the Jewish religion teaches about dance and singing and these kind of sort of activities?
I'm sure I could look it up for you right off the top of my head. I think dance and song is part of the folklore, just like it is part of the Hungarian folklore. And we don't really have anything like Lent. Oh, you know what? We do. We do have something like Lent, because I would think, you know, if people don't play music during Lent or something like that, that's where the coricazo came into being.
Yes.
You know about this? So I think there's 3 weeks. It's the Omer right now. There in Jewish religion, starting the second night of Passover, they start counting the Omer, which was like, it has to do with harvesting. They, you know, plant in the spring at Passover and they harvest at 7 weeks later at Shavuot, at the next holiday. I don't mean to get into Jewish folklore, but no, it's okay. So, but then there are periods during this time that you are not supposed to be so joyous. And so I think, you know, I'm not especially religious, but I really like my culture, my religion, the cultural things, the foods, the holidays, the spiritual practices, like the morality, you know, being kind to people, being generous, feeding the poor, you know, clothing the naked, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the basic tenets of what I think it means to be human, I think religion reflects very well. And when religion limits what you can do in things like Lent, or like in mourning practices, when you're sitting Shiva, do you know what that is? When someone dies, you stay at home for 7 days and you mourn, so that you can, you know, once the limitation has passed, that you can more fully appreciate the good stuff, like the singing and the dancing and the chocolate or whatever else.
Yes. Coming back to dances, may I ask which is your favorite Hungarian dance?
Oh my gosh, it's like asking which is your favorite chocolate, you know? I think I love a lot of the dances from Mezőség. I like the Székelyföldi dances. I think my favorite to do is the Roman Forgatos in from Kolotoseg, because I really like the 7/8. But I like the syncopation. I really love that. But Mezőkőpényi. Mezőkőpényi is like the one that suits my dance style the best. And that's from Székelyföld. And just, you know, I like Palotkai. I like the different dances from Mezőség. I like these dances, the Transylvanian dances, personally. I mean, not that I don't love all the Hungarian dances, but to do, you know, because look, I'm 57 now. I'm not going to be able to do all these jumping dances forever. So I really, really like the turning dances. And I'm really happy that I have a husband who also enjoys these dances, who can do them with me.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Judy. And I hope to see you in person. Thank you very much for joining Folk Talk and the iDance Hungary program. And I really look very much forward to witness this joyfulness of yours without the Skype in a Tanzhaus or in a dance camps in the near future.
I hope so too, Mishi. So nice to meet you. Give Julie a big hug and kiss for me. And keep playing, keep dancing, keep doing what you do. This is a wonderful project and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.